Welcome to the Farm to School podcast, where you will hear stories of how youth thrive and farmers prosper when we grow, cook, and eat delicious, nutritious local foods in schools.
We're your hosts, as always, Rick Sherman
and Michelle Markestein. We are Farm to School coordinators coming to you from the state of Oregon.
So, Michelle.
Yes, Rick. This is number 3 of 4 special episodes, right?
It is. It is. We're back at with you with 3 more exciting guests to share from the Growing School Garden Summit in San Diego, California. Actually, well, the plane, we landed in San Diego, but it was actually in La Jolla. And we were there at a place where they there was a golf course, and they had the U.S. Open, you know, golf championship.
Do you play golf? I feel like I should
badly.
Know this about you.
Okay. I mean, right. I have played before, and I play badly, and I'm not good or anything like that. I was more into baseball as a kid, but it's fun, you know, to,
yeah.
But
I got some clubs. My son and I do, we whack walnuts in the backyard with golf clubs.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, with a little farm.
We should do this after we're done recording. Okay, let's go.
Let's go. So, you said that at this conference there were over 500 school garden leaders from around the country.
500, yes. That was the word I get. I didn't physically count them all, but it was a big room of people. Yeah.
Sounds really exciting. Yeah,
it was a wonderful place to go. If you ever have the chance to go to one of these, I guarantee you will come out of it so inspired by all the work that everybody does. It gives you goosebumps. It's just so cool.
How would you even find out about it?
If you Google Growing School Garden Summit, that's a good place as any, and they will have it every 2 years.
Okay.
I guess. And so, and in different places across the country, last time it was in Denver, I guess.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'd love to hear some stories.
All right, let's get started. Let's hear it. Here we go. So I'm here at the Growing School Garden Summit yet again, and I have another wonderful guest with me. I have Reggie Jones with me. And Reggie, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you located at? What do you do?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. like Rick Shett said, my name is Reggie, and I live in Santa Cruz, California, and I work with Life Lab.
Life Lab. Yeah. What do you do when you do your stuff at Life Lab?
Yeah. So at Life Lab, I'm the National Curriculum and Training Specialist. So that's a really big title. That essentially means that I spend about half my time writing curriculum and developing new ideas and parsing them out. And I spend the other half of my time training educators, whether it be with on-site workshops or off-site workshops. And I do things like this where I have incredible opportunities to network through a national, you know, facing conference like this one or through other national networks. Yeah.
So do you actually get out in the field and teach with the kids too, or you're just more
sometimes.
Broad? Sometimes?
Sometimes, okay. Yeah. Here recently, in order to prepare for the summit, my coworker Whitney and I went out into the field and worked with a group of fourth grade students on a lesson that we had been developing for some time.
Okay. What's the one thing that excites you about your job? There's probably many things, but just one that comes to your mind right now.
Yeah. It's so hard to choose one.
Yes.
And if I had to say, I think right now the thing that excites me the most is just the opportunity for networking and the landscape of seeing so many people who are both new to the field and seeing a great amount of people who are experienced in the field and who are eager to share that information and that knowledge.
Yeah.
And that really excites me because it gives this way for new connections to be forged and new conversations to be had and just new ways of doing combined with the also really great ways things have already been, you know, been done and been going.
Yeah. Can you give me some examples of some of those things?
Yeah, so here at the summit, there's been a lot of opportunities for one key opportunity, really, for people who are new to the field and people who are more experienced in the field to connect through the activities of play. So on Saturday, yesterday afternoon, a lot of us went out and we just played games and we talked with each other and people had the opportunity to ask questions and get to know someone who may, you know, have more experience, or get to know people also outside of the context of like, let's just talk about work. Let's just connect about work. Like, let's connect on self so we can build relationship. And then from there, a mentor, like mentee thing can happen. Like, people can connect. And again, those new ideas can be heard by people who have been around for a while. And the, you know, ideas that have been ruminating and have been here for a while can be imparted on newer folks, and through play, through like having fun and laughing and getting to know each other.
Yeah. And that just sounds so awesome. And just to see a kid's face light up when you're in that setting and making a connection with a student too, and all that. What else could you, what can you tell me about yourself and what you do?
One other thing I can tell you about myself is I have the opportunity to work with educators virtually through virtual trainings. Mm-hmm. And those educators are really committed to the process of really learning what it takes to be a garden educator. So they take part of a 16-week class called the certification course.
Through LifeLab?
Through LifeLab,
yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that certification course really provides an opportunity for community building, but also like, what are the skills that are needed in today's landscape of garden education? What does it look like to manage 30 kids out in the garden? What does it look like to set up stations? What does it look like to, you know, teach multilingual learners? And so really being on the forefront of that and the edge of that, and people being like, oh, here are all the great things that I do, and I'm eager to learn more about what else I could be doing.
Well, that sounds like a super great resource. I know some people, when they think of starting a school garden or something, they get a little, it's a little daunting to think about all that. Oh, I have to do, you know, I have to not only get the garden planted and cultivate that, but then I have to, it's like herding cats, you know, so that's good. Should people feel very concerned about that, or?
I think concerned that, I don't think concerned is the right word, actually. I think people should be eager, or can be eager to, like, that concern can be read as fear. And I think it's more of an eagerness to learn. It's like, oh, how do I, you know, stop the gophers from eating all the lettuce or destroying the plants? And it's like, well, here's like some garden design tips. Here are some things that you can look into. And the cert course like allows people to do that in real time, allows that. If someone is having a problem in their school garden one week and they come to the certification course and they connect with someone who's out there, maybe having the same problem, who has dealt with that, they solve that problem right there. They just like connect at the beginning of the class every single day, every single time they come. There's always that time for people to connect and just catch up with each other and be like, how's it been going for you this week? Because it's an international thing. Like people from all over take the certification course and they really enjoy that aspect of being able to troubleshoot and problem solve and grow.
Okay. Well, I will put a link in the show notes about LifeLab and the certification course and everything that we've talked about today. So thank you so much for stopping by and saying hi.
Yeah.
It was great to meet you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you too, Rick. And thank you for all the great questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm here at the Growing School Garden Summit, and I have with me Danielle Russell from Chicago. Danielle, hello.
Hello.
And so tell me a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
So my name is Danielle, and I am the Green Schoolyards Program Manager at an organization called Openlands in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, and what do you do there?
I do a number of things.
Yeah.
So we have about 90 school gardens and green schoolyards that we've constructed since about 2006. So with that, we do a lot of professional development for teachers.
Okay.
We have a mini grant program to try and support that contingency of schools.
Yeah.
And then with the Green Schoolyards program, we are taking up asphalt and installing green infrastructure, so permeable pavement, playgrounds, fields, native gardens, and also edible gardens. And
okay.
Then working with the community to see like what they envision for that kind of space.
So I think a lot of our listeners know by now what a school garden is, but you said a green schoolyard. And is that what you were talking about getting rid of some of the asphalt and mitigating that? Tell me more about that. process?
Yes. So with climate change, especially in Chicago, we're going to get a lot of heavier rainfalls. So more intense rain events where people's basements are getting flooded, our waterways are being overwhelmed. We have a combined sewer system. So that rainwater and that sewage water are in the same kind of channel. So when we have too much rainfall, it gets into people's basements, and then it creates issues polluting our waterways.
Oh, man.
And so what we're trying to do is install more green infrastructure. So with our program, it's called Space to Grow.
Yeah.
It is the Chicago Green Schoolyards program. And with that, we're trying to capture rain where it falls so that it doesn't overwhelm and skirt off into the sewer system or into our rivers and our streams. And so with that, at this point, each schoolyard that we have, and we have about 34 of these green schoolyards, they're capturing at least 150 gallons of stormwater per rain event. And then that water is slowly filtered and then released so that it's helping to mitigate flooding in people's basements.
Wow. See, I had no idea, but that makes perfect sense, especially in urban areas where there's not much green space. That, you know, that water has to go somewhere and it's going to create problems. Well, that's really good. Do you think you're making an impact? Like, do you see, is it like a drop in the bucket, or is it little by little? What?
That's a great question. Yeah. I would say that the hope is that green infrastructure is everywhere.
Hmm.
So it doesn't have to be these large schoolyards where we're installing all these perforated pipes and all this gravel and everything. Trees are green infrastructure as well. Rain barrels are green infrastructure. So we want to be a part of a green infrastructure ecosystem that is helping to manage this water. But hopefully, I think our goal, our dream is that green schoolyards and green parks are everywhere. Yeah. But there is impact. So just kind of like anecdotally, we haven't done any deep studies into this. But we've heard from neighbors around schools that their basements aren't flooding anymore from that green infrastructure standpoint. In terms of having this new green space, we did have a study with Loyola University in Chicago where we found that these spaces are creating more opportunities for community cohesion. So it's a place where more people are able to gather and also get along with each other, especially kids. We're seeing less bullying because there's more to do instead of just having like asphalt. They're having beauty around them. There's more to do. So there's less opportunity for, less fun to be had.
And you mentioned grants. You operate a grant too. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so we have what we're calling our mini grant program. Right now we're calling it the Open Lands Garden Growth Grant.
Mm.
And so we have about 90 schools that are in our network. And so unfortunately we only have two and a half staff people that we want to support all these gardens. And so what we're doing right now is we have an application where schools can apply for, right now it's about $500 for supplies for their school garden. And
Great.
Then we'll also offer them technical support if they want support with like leading students in the garden or leading community members in the garden. Yeah. We help with that as well.
So are you behind the scenes, or do you actually get out in the schools and get to mix it up with the kids and stuff? Do you do?
Okay. Both, yeah. Oh, good. So, good. I mean, we would love to be at the schools more often, but we also do a lot of professional development for teachers. So right now, our kind of main target audience is teachers.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for stopping by and saying hi. I'll put a link to what you talked about and your grants in the show notes. And thanks. Any parting shots on your way out? Anything? Any words of wisdom?
Wow, that's a great question. I think just to keep an open mind about how young people can connect to nature, and that it doesn't have to just be the garden, but it can be environmental justice, it can be nature play, it can be herbalism. And then also thinking about how their parents can connect in those ways as well, so that everyone has a place in the garden that's not just pulling weeds or transplanting things.
Bringing the message home. Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm glad I asked you that. Parting shot. That was really good. Thank you so much, Danielle.
Thank you. This was fun.
So I'm here at the Growing Garden Summit still, and I was able to snag a longtime friend of mine who I've known for years and years in passing at these conferences, and it's Erin Kroom, and you're in Atlanta, Georgia, correct?
I am. Thanks
and you're
for
with
me.
Small Bites Adventure
Bites
Club.
Adventure Club.
So tell me about that. What is that like? What do you do there?
Yeah, so our mission at Small Bites Adventure Club is to help children discover, eat, and love fruits and veggies.
Okay.
And we do that by empowering teachers through our hands-on kits that we ship out every month that basically put everything in a box to make hands-on cooking easy for them.
Okay. So, how do you make it easy for them with those kits?
So we know teachers are great at teaching.
Yeah.
But we know teachers are really short on time. They're short on, you know, having the resources to make great things happen sometimes. So we send out everything from, like, the step-by-step recipe instructions for different recipes every month. Stickers. You got to have stickers. Every kid loves stickers.
I have stickers.
Yes.
There you go.
You can't have a program without stickers.
Yeah.
So little I Tried It stickers go in the packet.
Yeah.
Take-home letters for their favorite grown-ups, the kids' favorite grown-ups. And also, you know, sometimes we even send fresh ingredients straight to the school so that they can do the hands-on cooking.
Now, you didn't always do this. You grew into and created this. So how did you get your start? Let's go in the Wayback Machine.
Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
So over 20 years ago, I read an article about this school garden program. It was a farm program over the summer where kids would go out and learn about where their food came from. And I thought, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I heard about folks in Vermont that were starting to get started. So I went, grew up in Mississippi. So, you know, went to school in Vermont, did graduate school there.
Hmm.
It was very scary because it was very cold.
Yes.
And I didn't know anything about Vermont. And so that they were really doing some of the first work around farm to school. So I was able to study that, do my research. I wrote my master's thesis on farm to school. And so when I moved back south to Georgia, I started a farm to school program with many, many partners within the state. And we grew it, you know, over many, many years. So I used to work with Georgia Organics, which is a wonderful nonprofit.
Yeah.
And is still doing amazing
now,
work.
Were you the ones at Georgia Organics? Is that where you did the golden radish then?
Did,
I remember that. I've always been jealous of that. And we needed to do a golden pear or something in Oregon. But okay.
Yeah,
tell me about that.
So we started the farm to school program at two schools and quickly realized that we were going to need a different type of system to scale the program and to... you know, how are we going to bring farm to school to, you know, that over 100 districts? I think it's 190 districts across Georgia.
Yeah.
And what we found is that school nutrition directors were brilliant. They had great ideas. But what we really needed to do was recognize the work they were doing. We needed to highlight the champions and provide some kind of a matrix for what is farm to school. So helping to define it, it's school garden, it's local procurement, it's teaching about food in the classroom. So once we kind of provided that framework and rewarded very publicly the great work that was being done, it really meant so much to school district leaders and champions to be recognized in a way that was very public. You know, we would have the awards at the Capitol. We would have, you know, the superintendent of education and agriculture come out. And I think it was really meaningful and a great way to grow the work and grow the champions that were leading it.
I know when I was a food service director for years and years, I always had an award ceremony every year. And I brought the superintendent and the school board to hand out the awards. They were just dollar store frames. But to see the look on the people when they got, like, you serve the best pizza in town or you're the rookie of the year. And, you know, I'd wear a tux and things and make it a big deal. And That was so fun. And so we've been trying to get the ball rolling again in Oregon. And maybe this next biennium we're going to do it. And you're an inspiration for that. So
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, you're an inspiration for me.
Oh, well, geez,
you're doing
back
the,
at you.
Great work.
Oh,
every day in and out.
Oh, stop. Okay, so you left Georgia Organics. What was the precipitous, if it was, or what is the why did you go and start the Small Bites Adventure Club? What was the need there?
So, well, the transition was I stepped down from Georgia Organics just to do more consulting work. My kids were really little,
yeah,
and it was a really special time. So, but I continued to do, you know, consultant work, and the Kellogg Foundation had actually found a strategic plan that we had written for farm to early care. So I got really fascinated with farm to early care and like the importance of working with children 0 to 5 in that critical and special and unique time when kids are really open to trying new things. And also the teachers are so into cooking and gardening, and it really resonates with them as well. And their charge to us, the Kellogg Foundation, was how can we create farm to early care programming that is equitable and scalable. And so I got really fascinated. How do you scale high quality programs? And so I started, you know, thinking about the growth of like HelloFresh, you know, meal kit programs. And I had a friend that had a really like local food based meal kit program. And I just got really fascinated with how could we put farm to school in a box? Because when I would go out to schools, particularly childcare programs, people would say, teachers would say, you know, I love all this great work you're doing, but what am I supposed to do on Monday morning? How am I supposed to translate this to a 4-year-old? You know, this curriculum is awesome, but it's been sitting on the shelf.
Yeah.
And I love that conference that you did last year, but, you know, the people that we sent, you know, they don't work here anymore. So we needed something turnkey, something that was easy, something that was really simple that any teacher could do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we got started, is like, how easy can we make high quality farm to school for any teacher?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Because, I mean, that's the whole reason we're doing this podcast, because I think we do such a good job in the schools, the cafeteria, the classroom, but the community and stuff. Like, there's so many people that just, they don't know about, like, when I bump into somebody and they say, what do you do for a living? I go, I'm a farm-to-school analyst coordinator. And they'll say, what is farm-to-school? And then I talk about school gardens. And then there's gardens at schools. They just don't know, you know. So that's a good perspective to put on things. So
yeah. And putting the joy back into it.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of times, you know, we get caught up in, like, what are the procurement regulations? And, think, you know, teachers always lead with joy. And they, you know, kids love the curiosity and the you know, getting their hands, you know, making new things and dirty,
yeah,
you know, tasting. And it's a messy thing. So, you know, whatever we can do to help facilitate that process for teachers is what we're excited about.
Well, great. Well, Erin, thank you so much for stopping by and saying hello to us. And I look forward to seeing you again forever and ever. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks so much,
Erin,
for having me.
All right. Bye. Hey, everybody. We'd like to thank all of our guests for being a part of our show. And thank you for listening today.
Wow. What a gift to hear folks share their stories. Farm to School was written, directed, and produced by Rick Sherman and Michelle Markison, with production support from Leanne Lochner from Oregon State University. This podcast was made possible by a grant from the United States Department of Agriculture.
The content and ideas on the Farm to School podcast does not necessarily reflect the opinions of Oregon State University, Oregon Department of Education, and the United States Department of Agriculture. The USDA, Oregon Department of Education, and Oregon State University are equal employment providers and employers.
Want to learn more about Farm to School? Connect with us. You can check out other episodes, show notes, and send us your ideas for other episodes at farmtoschoolpodcast.org. That's all one word, farmtoschoolpodcast.org.
We would love to hear from you too, so stop by the website just mentioned to say hello or give us an idea for a future podcast.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks everyone. Bye.